there is a accessible region of potential space which has two vacua. One of them is a false vacuum and the other is a true vacuum, and there's nothing else, so let's forget about everything else, okay? And there's an extraordinarily tiny negative cosmological constant vacuum here. And that's where some fictitious civilization of aliens live, okay? And they've done all sorts of wonderful things in life, but what we know about this geometry is that if they formed out of some true vacuum A and they're in a bubble of B, that eventually they're going to crunch. Okay, so the Kolmogorov-Deluge instanton, which we've heard a few times during this talk about, has, when I analytically continue it, the property that as the field rolls down on these open Robertson-Walker time slices, that things start to blue shift as I go to later and later times, and that on the time scale of order, the Hubble constant defined by this vacuum B, which is just VB, absolute value over 3, and Planck squared, I'm going to experience a big crunch. Okay? So, are we doomed to crunch? So I'm stuck in the bubble. The bubble wall is effectively my Big Bang, and I can't get out. So one thing you might propose is, well, I've got this region A, which is allowed to inflate. So maybe one idea is if I make some bubble of A embedded in my bubble of B, so I try and make some little region here where I go back into A, and let's say it's spherically symmetric for simplicity, I know that if I can make this thing bigger than the Hubble constant defined with respect to the A vacuum, that this thing by causality cannot disappear. So I would have saved myself by jumping into this little pocket of A. So the Penrose diagram, if I draw a little piece of this de Sitter space in the A vacuum, maybe it would look something like this. So forget about the outside now. I make this pocket, it expands, eventually it gets bigger than the horizon size defined by the A vacuum, and then it just can't collapse. Okay? Now the problem with this, which Ben mentioned earlier, is that if I look at this point, which is the two-sphere, it's an anti-trap surface. And I started here in the B vacuum, and there's just no way to make an anti-trapped surface embedded in the B vacuum without doing something like violating the null energy condition. So this is the Penrose singularity theorems that we've heard about. So what I know is that if I were to draw this picture and I look at the past light cone, I go outside of my bubble, then one of two things have to happen. Either there was a past singularity here or I violated the null energy condition. So let's say that I can't violate the null energy condition in a consistent way, and there was no past singularity, then idea one doesn't work. So nix that. There's no way to save myself by building a bubble of the A vacuum. So one thing you might do is make a small little bubble. That's allowed. And by the way, this was shown by Guth and Farhi. So one thing I might hope is, well, I can make a small little bubble, and I know that quantum mechanics violates the null energy condition. So there's a finite probability that my small little bubble will tunnel into a big one, and then I'm safe. But the rate for that is really slow, and I've got this finite time before I crunch, so the probability that that's going to happen is pretty low. So forget that, too. Now, what if there was something else? Let's say there was another vacuum, call it C. And that vacuum of C could have positive or negative vacuum energy, zero vacuum energy, whatever. Then let's make an additional assumption in my story, which is that A to C is just forbidden. So the only thing that could happen, given that I start in A, is to make bubbles of B. Well, we know that, as we've heard, any bubble is not isolated, so there's always going to be collisions between other bubbles. So one occurrence that will happen in this story is that I could have a pair of bubbles of B embedded in A. Which collide at some point. And we can ask ourselves, well, what does that do? So a kind of nice thing can happen, which is that if that potential satisfies the following property, basically that the position in phi of the C vacuum is more or less approximately equal to 2 times the value of phi in the B vacuum, minus the value of phi in the A vacuum, that we can form a little pocket of C. The reason for this is basically that if I go to the vicinity of the collision, and I have a highly boosted set of walls that come in, they basically don't feel the interaction term in the potential. They simply superpose. And this was something that was shown by Easter, Giblin, Lim, Hui, and Yang. So basically, if I have highly relativistic walls, I can do this locally. At least locally, I can pop into existence this little pocket of C. And then later, what happens depends on what I assume about the detailed form of that potential. So the interactions play a role a little bit later in time. So if the potential in the V vacuum is greater in magnitude than the potential in the C vacuum, then I know that C expands. So energetically, I've created this region. There's a pressure gradient that points from C to B, and the thing that this thing wants to do is basically expand out into B. Okay? But the only way I can make that happen is by making the C vacuum negative, given my assumption in my story. So, well, I just make this little pocket of C, and that ends up crunching before the rest of the B vacuum does. So it doesn't really help us with the problem of crunching. If VB is less than VC, then C wants to contract. And in the absence of gravity, it's just going to contract and reach zero size. But if we include gravity, then there's two things that can potentially save us here. So with gravity, I know, one, that domain walls are repulsive, according to Vilenkin, Ipser, and Sakivi. So if I put myself in the vicinity of a domain wall and I try and go towards it, there's actually an effective repulsion. So the geodesics tend to bend away from domain walls. So this is one thing that changes when I include gravity. Another thing that potentially changes is that since I have the C vacuum greater than B, if it's actually positive energy, then if I can grow the C vacuum fast enough, it can become bigger than a C vacuum horizon volume, and then by causality, it can't collapse. Okay, so that was kind of like this idea one we had here. Okay? So let's call option two too big to fail. Okay? So if I can make it too big to fail, I'm good. So what I'm going to show you during the rest of the talk and give you some details, basically is that given one and two, these changes that come with gravity, if my imagined civilization is lucky enough, and there happens to be a potential that satisfies this requirement up here, and there's a C vacuum that is positive energy, then I'm set. So I just have to wait around. I have to explore this universe in B until I find a little pocket of C, and I can save myself from the crunch. So maybe they found the secret to life, and they want to like get the message out to the rest of the universe, then they can actually do so. Okay, fantastic. So let's see how it works. They don't know where to look, but they're probably going to get lucky, because if I look at a slice, so I just look at one of these constant density slices, and I do some projection of that open universe onto a Poincaré disk, then these regions of C, this is like a top-down picture of this constant time surface, eat up a whole bunch of volume. And if I look at any disk of radius C in these open slicings, then the volume fraction in C divided by, the volume fraction in B divided by the volume fraction in C goes to zero as C goes to infinity.
Matt,
yeah.
Whether or not that is the relevant argument depends on the measure.
I'm not talking about measure. I'm just talking, this is a concrete statement. So, yeah, so I can start here, and let's say I know that I'm going to crunch, okay? Maybe I need to wait an ADS time, so I don't really know, but I'm making up the story, so I can say I know that I crunch. Then these guys can just send out a bunch of astronauts with different boosts, and a fraction of order one of those astronauts is going to end up in a region C. Absolutely, because it's a space-like thing that I'm running into. I agree with you. Sure. You'd agree that if I knew the instant that the thing formed, I was going to crunch, I could send out geodesics, and then basically all of them would end up in C.
You want to do this like as I enter the bubble B.
Yeah.
If you have enough energy to build all these guys.
Okay, but it's a science fiction story, so.
Yeah,
we missed our chance. So if we were these guys, we would be totally screwed. Totally screwed. Okay, so let me use the rest of the time to fill in some of the details of this story and show you computationally how this is possible. Okay. So, details. So if we just have two bubbles, then the collision space-time has SO21 symmetry, which I think Matt mentioned. And our other assumption is that we're only considering B on B collisions. And the other assumption I want to make is that there's no dissipation. All the energy goes into making this pocket of C. There's no like outgoing radiation or anything else that comes out. Okay, so shouldn't have erased that picture. Now we've got a set of parameters that we can use to define this space-time, and I want to consider infinitely thin walls, and I want to consider only vacuum energy inside the bubbles, so we're going to work in this thin wall approximation that Matt mentioned. Okay, so we have kinematics. There's some initial radius of these bubbles. And depending on how far apart I put them, they're going to collide at a given position. I'll tell you what that Z means in a second. So we've got B, A, B, C. There's some Hubble constant in B. So in my formalism, HB squared is actually negative, but let's just look at the absolute value. There's some Hubble constant in C. And it turns out there has to be another parameter, which is kind of like the Schwarzschild mass. There is this guy, and then there's some Hubble constant in A. Okay. So because of this symmetry, there's a hyperbolic version of Birkhoff's theorem, which allows you to write down the most general vacuum metrics with that symmetry. So they generally look like this, which is kind of what you get from Birkhoff's theorem, but you'll notice that the time-like coordinate is a little bit funny. And these metric functions can take different values in V, A, and C, but they always have to look like 1 minus 2m over z plus h I squared z squared. Okay. So z is a time-like coordinate. That's why this is a little bit funny compared to what you're used to seeing from spherically symmetric Birkhoff's theorem. And the known parameters are these Hubble constants. Well, there's also this domain wall here, so there's some tension, which I'll call K. So the tension and the cosmological constants are basically fixed by this picture. And there's a few things that aren't fixed. One of them is ZC, right? The place where these things collide. So that Z coordinate is this Z coordinate. So that's kinematics. And there's the other thing that I don't know. I'll tell you the way to do this matching basically is to have a non-zero mass parameter here. So there's some parameter in this metric. MC basically is just fixed by energy conservation. Okay, and we'll see how that happens in a second. Okay, now we can take this picture. And just to be even more concrete, let's slice it in half, okay? Actually, let me just redraw that for clarity. So here we've got A, C, and B, and the other thing over here is just going to be a mirror image. Let's take the bubbles to nucleate at Z equals zero, and let's fix the x-coordinate defined with respect to the C vacuum to be zero at the point of collision, which happened at the Z value ZC. So the junction conditions tell me that I should match Z across these different regions. So Z is some parameter in the metric that needs to match. I want the metric to be continuous. But given that constraint, I don't necessarily have to have the V and C x coordinates match across these junctions. That's something that can change. And now we can just start sewing. So we've got region A. So region A is the false vacuum from whence these B bubbles came. And in region A, this is just hyperbolic de Sitter space, which has a metric 1 plus h a squared z squared. Okay? And if I look at the piece of hyperbolic de Sitter space that I need, this is a Penrose-like diagram where each point corresponds to a hyperbola. This is z equals 0. This is z going to infinity. There's no minus sign, so there's no horizon. There is, just not in these coordinates. I can define x equals 0 in this C vacuum. And basically the piece I need to keep in my picture up there is some little sliver. Okay. Okay, I've got region B, which is hyperbolic anti-de Sitter space. This describes the inside of the B bubbles. And in here, the metric function looks like this. So I get a minus sign, because by my definitions in ADS, I say h squared is negative. So there is a sort of horizon in these hyperbolic coordinates. Okay, again, in this Penrose-like diagram, each point is an h2. This is z equals 0. This is z goes to infinity. And there is this horizon at HB inverse. And the piece of this spacetime I keep looks something like this. So here's the bubble, nucleates at Z equals 0. We're in B. Here's the collision at ZC. And typically I expect a crunch. You can see it very easily from this conformal diagram because there's a Cauchy horizon, and Cauchy horizons in general are bad. So from this collision point, the domain wall that gets spit out that tells me how to connect onto C can either go left or it can go right. So I can have, if I work in terms of the proper time of some guy riding on the bubble wall, dz d tau bigger than or less than zero. Okay, we're almost done. So we have C, region C. That's the only part we have left. So this is hyperbolic Schwarzschild de Sitter, if I assume that vacuum C is positive energy. And something kind of funny with these hyperbolic metrics is that the mass squared can be bigger than or less than zero. So if the mass is bigger than zero, I have a horizon. And the piece that I'm trying to match onto looks something like this. Now, if I have mass less than zero, it turns out your only option is to have z decreasing for what we care about, and you end up with a crunch. So the next thing that's left to do is basically impose energy conservation at this junction, which tells me how to sew all these pieces together. This matching of Z at each of these walls tells me how they dynamically evolve. So from energy conservation, what I have basically is if I start in the rest frame of one wall, boost to another, boost to another, boost to another, I have to come back to my rest frame when I get to the end. Okay? And this is basically just requiring that there's no conical singularity in the metric, so it's regular. And when you do this, you get a formula which relates all the metric factors in A, B, and C. Okay, and I know the heaviest thing that I can make, which from point one having heavy domain walls is good because they're gravitationally repulsive. So the heaviest domain wall I can make, I can get by requiring that these things come out with zero velocity. So from energy conservation, I get a bound on the tension of domain walls, which goes something like HA squared plus HB squared, the value of Z at the collision divided by 2, the value of Z at the collision, 1 plus HA squared, Z at the collision squared. Okay. Now, to get a repulsive domain wall, I need to make a domain wall with a tension that is at least greater than HC squared plus HB squared. So putting that into here, if I make a domain wall that's just heavy enough to be repulsive, then this gives me a bound on the vacuum energy that I can have in C, which in the limit of very highly boosted walls basically is like this, HA squared minus HB squared squared divided by HA squared. Okay. And there's an additional requirement, which is that I needed Z dot to be positive in order to get a region of C that ends up expanding. And when you impose that requirement, you find that HA has to be less than the magnitude of HB. So we see from here that we can produce these heavy domain walls magnitude of HB squared is much less than the magnitude of HA squared, then we know HC has to be less than HA. So the moral of the story is that by doing this junction condition, requiring energy conservation, and chugging through the calculation, you find that it's possible for you to save yourself from the crunch here in region C as long as the vacuum energy in C is lower than that in A. Okay, and this is also related to the same singularity theorems that told me I couldn't make a pocket of A and C, but I'm out of time, so I can't tell you about that, so I'll stop there.
So if your potential does have the features you want it to have, where in terms of the values of the potential at A and C and so on, I just missed something. Then are you guaranteed that this process will work out, or does it depend on Z of the collision, or are there additional things you have to dial?
Yeah, so if you make the potential requirement so that the distance, I mean, effectively what you need is that the distance here is roughly equivalent to the distance here.
So say all those things work.
So those are all working. Then there's going to be some limit where the bubbles are far enough apart where this just happens. You want a large, but let's say that we grant that too, that the tension can be big, then there's, kinematically this is allowed, so if you do form collision, then that's going to happen.
Now you're going to have world lines that sort of pass through vacuum with negative cosmological constant and come back out, this restriction on the relative vacuum energies, does that mean that you cannot have world lines that pass through negative vacuum infinitely many times? So clearly there will be some set of measure zero of world lines that will pass through negative energy vacuum once and then maybe, you know, keep hovering in some visitor vacuum. But does this mean that you can't keep coming back to the... Can you spend an arbitrarily long amount of time in a negative energy vacuum? Because that would be interesting from the point of view of questions of defining more precise observables and so on.
I don't think so, because in order to ensure your survival, if I'm in the C vacuum, then the domain wall is always accelerating away from me. So I think there is going to be a point where you get so deep into C that you just can't get back out. But the domain wall is time-like, so I guess presumably you could hang out there for a while.
So the strategy would be to try to get from C up to an even higher vacuum so that you could just cycle through the whole thing over and over.
I think you're ultimately going to be limited by where you started. So I think it's always going to be limited by A. So yeah, you can't jump up higher than where you start.
So are you saying that if you put the bubbles further and further apart, this becomes easier? This sounds a little bit counterintuitive.
Okay, great. So I had to rush in the end, but thanks for asking that question. So imagine that the A vacuum was zero energy. Okay, so this is just Minkowski space. Then one thing that I should have said but didn't is that in De Sitter space, there's a kinematic. I mean, this bound really comes from kinematics, so I can only put the bubbles so far apart because there's a cosmological horizon. But if I make the A vacuum zero energy, I can seemingly put them arbitrarily far apart. Okay, so I can make the center of mass energy arbitrarily high, and then it seems like I can make an arbitrarily heavy domain wall, and I could jump arbitrarily far up. Okay, so the reason that fails is actually geometry. So it turns out that when you make these really heavy walls, you find that this mass parameter has to be less than zero, and then you always end up crunching. So you can make these arbitrarily heavy walls, kick yourself up arbitrarily far, but then you find that inside that pocket you've made, you just crunch.
Actually, we simulated that, and that's exactly what happens.
Oh, cool.